Welcome to East Meets West, episode 228. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang. 228? 228.
Two, right?
We've done 228 episodes.
Can you believe that?
No, I can. It's actually quite surprising that we're still here.
Yeah, for a podcast that started with a mic stuck in a tea kettle. Well, that wasn't the first episode, but it was one of the first. We're not doing bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're doing pretty good. I'm seeing if I can bounce some light off the wall.
Stop lighting yourself. It's an audio podcast. Just because you can view it streamed live. Some of these audio podcasts that do live streaming, they don't even have cameras on everybody. So, you know, just because your shot's a little yellow today, don't fret it. Don't sweat it.
I'm good at math. I'm not good at math.
Hey, speaking of math, rest in peace, Benoit Mandelbrot died this weekend.
Mandelbrot? The Mandelbrot?
The Mandelbrot of the Mandelbrot set. Father of the fractal.
So, I mean, was it just, you know, age, or was he like thinking too hard and had an aneurysm or something?
He was pretty old. I don't recall the cause of death. Cancer. He was fighting cancer. And he was 80. Well, some people say he was 85. Some people say he was 85.
That's a pretty good age. He saw a lot.
Even if he's fighting cancer, 85 is, you know, it's pretty good.
So, I don't know. That's a long life. I mean, do you think people will live longer than that?
Well, the average age is only still in the 70s, right?
72. I think.
Oh, I think it's older than that now.
Is it?
It was 72 when I was in high school in the 80s. I think it's like closer to 77 now.
Huh. That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if more than a quarter of a population can attain an age over 100. And at the same time, still be physically mobile and you know, you're not kind of stuck using, you know, a wheelchair or a scooter or some sort of health services or some sort of care for the elderly kind of service. Because my dad's pretty sprightly for someone who's 72. I mean, he moves around a lot, cooks, yells at people, yells at me. So.
And how old is he?
72.
Average life expectancy in the United States is 78.4 years.
Wow. It's a pretty good chunk of time.
According to the World Bank, 78.4 years. Yeah, so 85, you're 7 years over average. You know, it's not
That's
too
good.
Bad. You know, I think I've mentioned this before, but when Dean Martin died, Dean Martin was around the same age. He was in his 80s, I think. And I remember everybody saying, oh, it's no surprise he died the way he drank.
So he was 80-something.
He's in his 80s. It's a surprise that he didn't die before now, the way he pretended to drink. And that's the thing about Dean Martin, apparently, is he actually didn't drink anywhere near as much as he pretended to on stage and screen. But still.
He just always had a glass with him, so it just assumed, people assumed.
Yeah, it was part of his shtick, right?
Yeah. It was, you know, his affectation to be, you know, the hard-drinking... all right. I guess so. This will be a solo show from here on out.
Why is it a solo show?
Oh, suddenly your video cut out. So, oh, sorry. I thought you just.
Oh, sorry. No, I don't know why that happened. It's back.
It's okay. But people said the same thing about George Burns. I mean, people, you know, it's like when he died, it's like, well, how can someone so long, you know, live so long without having any form of cigarette or smoking related illness? And someone brought up the point, well, you know, he really didn't smoke the cigars. He just kind of had them.
Yeah.
They were lit. Yeah, but he didn't, like, you know, puff all the time, only when he was on camera talking to people.
Life expectancy for the entire world is 67.2 years.
That's not bad.
Well, okay. This is really interesting. Okay, the United States. I'm looking at Wikipedia now, so take it with a grain of salt. Wikipedia says 79.4. What is the citation on these numbers? This is not from the same source. This is by United Nations. Okay.
Yeah.
This is from the United Nations numbers. United States 79.4 sounds pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not the United States. That's the Virgin Islands. The United States is 78.2. Number 38 in life expectancy. Cuba has a higher life expectancy than the United States.
Yeah, it's probably because most of their young people fled.
Can you guess which country has the highest life expectancy?
Would that be Switzerland? No. Japan.
Yes, Japan. 82.6. Switzerland's number four. It's high up there, 81.7. Hong Kong, 82.2.
Wow, Hong Kong would be kind of one of the last places I would consider to be high age. Mainly because it seems like such a stressful city, stressful living condition, being crowded.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, you might have lots of kids that are like very parentally involved, you know, doting kids or whatever, making sure that mom or dad is taken care of.
We kick Fiji's ass, 68.8. Feel bad for him though. Where's Canada? Are they ahead of us?
Oh, why did everyone use Canada? I always find it very, very illuminating that go ahead. That people always somewhere in the beginning always compared to Canada. I think it's just because it's north and it looks a lot like the U.S. but isn't.
Yeah.
So then they can.
Well, they're not listed. Why are they not even listed here?
Because they're not real people, Tom. I have ages.
That's weird. Now, what is Canada hiding?
They're hiding a lot, I'm sure. I mean, there's that vast expanse of ice and igloos.
Well, Canada, you compare them because they're right next door. You compare Canada. I would look at Canada and Mexico because it's sort of like, well, these people are in generally the same area. So mm-hmm. There are neighbors. It's like when you look at your, you know, rival towns when you're looking at stats or things like, you know, people compare San Francisco and Oakland because they're right next to each other.
Yeah.
New York,
but they
New
have
Jersey.
Different population base, and you know, it's. I mean, how do you pick something for comparison? Do you just pick it because it's adjacent, or because you look at they have similar, you know, they have similar lifestyles, they have a similar demographic, they have similar incomes, you know, quality of life, you know? I mean, you couldn't directly compare, say, like the U.S. and say like a third world nation. Right, because there's so many different factors.
Oh, there's
so
Canada, number eight. 80.7 years.
80.7?
Yeah.
Wow. It's a pretty ripe age.
Now, what's interesting is there's the CIA World Factbook numbers listed here,
you know,
as well.
That Factbook is really dated because I remember looking at that years ago, and the numbers really haven't changed.
The World Factbook's 2009 estimates, so I don't know how dated they are, but they're from 2009, Macau has the longest life expectancy, 84.36. Andorra is number two, and Japan's number three.
Andorra. Isn't Andorra one of those principalities that sits between, like, Spain and France and makes a boatload off, like...
It's between Florin and Gilder. No,
wasn't that in...
That's the Princess Bride. That, yeah.
Why
is the United States so far behind? I guess they're not that far behind, but it seems, you know, is it because I've heard people say it's because of more immigration. You have more people.
More immigration.
More
we
people
also
coming
have
in who had a harder life to begin with, and so their life expectancy isn't as high.
It's also because I think also mainly because there's been so many population shifts in the U.S., I mean, internal migration from one end to another. So,
really? You think that reduces the life expectancy moving around?
No, but I think that, well, not directly, but I think, I mean, people, I don't know, I always figure stress plays a good part in kind of reducing a life expectancy. And I think just people being farther apart from other people that they're related to might have something to do with it. It could be a stretch.
That seems like a stretch to me. I know what you're saying. And it's not a bad postulation to say stress can reduce your
health. No, stress
and your
life known to actually
sure,
reduce.
I don't know that moving around is one of the bigger stressors. Probably more, it's job more than anything. Work.
Mm-hmm.
The United States has one of the less effective healthcare systems, and it has one of the least amount of holiday times. So if you have, and we're generally up there in stress work-related stress.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in perspective. The United States is in the same category as Kuwait, Slovenia, Cuba, Denmark, and Chile. That's about where we are for life expectancy.
I would expect Denmark to be slightly higher.
Yeah, Denmark's a little surprising there too, isn't it? No disrespect to Portugal and Cuba and Chile, but Denmark's, because they're Scandinavian, even though they're attached to Europe, not to the Scandinavian peninsula.
Wasn't all Scandinavia part of Europe, though?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying Denmark is attached to the European continent. You know what I meant, yeah. Right? Okay.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Sorry.
So Denmark being Scandinavian, you think of Scandinavian as stereotypically being healthier. I don't know why. It's very cold. It's just like, you know, you put an apple in the fridge and it keeps longer. You got people living in cold weather. They should keep longer, right?
Maybe. Less.
Live in refrigerators.
I don't know. You could always move north all the way up to Canada.
Canada's good. Canada's 8. But cold weather doesn't bear out because Japan is...
Japan's in the... Well, it's interesting. Can you... Because it's averaged across the entire population, but can you break that down further within that nation and see which regions have a higher...
Well, I can give you a pretty good guess. Tokyo is where most of the people live. Right?
Are you sure?
In Japan?
No, I mean, there's a huge population. It's not like a quarter of the population. There's 100. How many people live in Japan?
All right, you do that.
100.
Hong Kong is number 2. That's not very cold.
Population estimates.
Iceland.
127 million.
Most people live in cities, though. Most people don't live on Mount Fuji.
People generally don't live on Mount Fuji. I think it's considered sacred.
It's cold too.
Just because you see it snowing at the top, it's cold on the entire across the entire mountain?
Yes, where there's snow, it's generally cold. I think that's
At the top. I think that's pretty non-controversial. The mountain won't be freezing.
So we got Iceland number 3. There we go. Switzerland number 4. Now we're talking. Australia's number 5, though. They're hot. This is ridiculous, though. Sweden is number 6.
But all of Australia isn't like, you know, sweltering hot. I mean,
where do people live? They live on the beach. They don't live in cold weather in Australia, do they? Are you trying to argue that more people in Australia live in cold weather?
Well, New South Wales has a pretty temperate. It's not like hot.
Oh, please. You're just reaching for an argument now.
No, I'm not, Tom.
Well, you know, it's pretty hot in Switzerland during the summer. So maybe
it's true.
Catch them.
And I'm not
Iceland,
saying not.
Iceland is actually the warmer between ice and Greenland. It's actually misnamed. It's pretty sweltering in Iceland.
Because of all those hot water geysers that they have because of all the volcanic activity.
Israel's number 8.
Actually, you know, diet doesn't work because Australians have the same diet as Americans in terms of fat and salt intake.
Exactly. Exactly the same diet?
Close.
Canadian diet's pretty similar to the United States.
No. There was a fatness scale. Not fat.
Oh, really? You're talking like specific, like percentage wise.
Well, no. Like the fattest countries in the world were, it was actually Mexico, the U.S.,
Mexico,
Australia,
really?
United Kingdom.
Yeah.
I think Canada was a little bit lower, but it was still near the top.
Mm-hmm.
For fatty people.
So you can't really relate fat to health either, because Australia is number 5.
What's fat?
Or I shouldn't say health. They may be living a long time in pain and agony because they're fat, but they're living. They're not dying.
But they're enjoying that whatever they're eating, I guess. Oh, wait. So the last 50 years, New Zealand was the other one.
They're fat in New Zealand?
Yes.
This is interesting.
So, but by country, this is the way it goes. And, of course, this is by Forbes in 2007. Nauru, Micronesia, Cook Islands, Tonga, Niue.
This is fat content or weight? I'm curious.
This is BMI.
So, okay.
The thing is, I don't really like BMI as an indicator because it's misleading.
I prefer ASCAP myself.
Samoa, Palau, and you notice the first seven, I think, are all Pacific Island states.
Which is, you know, you got some big people, you got some big guys. That would make sense for New Zealand because you got a big Maori population, also Pacific Islanders.
And you know those, you know, the genetically predisposed to that because you know their ancestors needed a certain amount of caloric retention in order to make it across vast distances of water. Kuwait comes in at 8. Number 9 is United States, 10 is Cuba, Dominica, okay. Argentina, wow. Number 13, I'd actually never...
Because all that steak. They got great steaks down in Argentina.
14 is Egypt, 15 Malta. Did you see any fat people in Malta?
Not really. Maltese people, I mean, the like residents of Malta that I saw there seemed perfectly normal to me. But I'm from the U.S. where people are really fat, apparently, according to this study. So maybe I wouldn't notice.
I don't know. I really don't trust the BMI. I'm supposed to weigh 20 pounds less than I am. But if I did, I would actually be skin and bones.
That's what you're supposed to be, skin and bones. Although, you know, if you have a little fat on you, you have a better chance of living through a hospitalization.
I know. My cousin went through that. Lost a lot of weight.
But yeah, because it gives you a little more energy to make it through whatever surgery.
Well, especially when you're not eating. I mean, if you're really sick, you're not taking in a lot of food.
You usually lose your appetite, yeah.
So, you know, it helps to have a, you know, some pounds on you to begin with.
All right, we've got an election here coming up in the United States. In a few weeks. Do you know how you're voting, Roger?
I got a bunch of booklets I have to go through, but I've been so busy.
Who are you voting for Insurance Commissioner of California?
I have no idea.
So yeah, this is what's called a midterm election, which means people kind of take it seriously. Every 4 years, the United States takes their election very seriously, and about half the people show up to vote. Every two years off from that, the United States kind of takes it seriously, and like 30 to 40% show off. And then in the off years, it's like local things that actually will really affect your life and how your daily life works, and then no one votes. That's just the way it works.
That's the way it is.
Yeah. So right in California, we have a governor election. A lot of governors being elected right now.
It's Brown and Whitman.
Jerry Brown, former governor of California, former mayor of Oakland, against Meg Whitman, former head of eBay, as well as Laura Wells, a financial systems consultant, Dale Ogden, an actuary, and Shalene Nightingale, a business owner. Dale Ogden's the Libertarian candidate. Laura Wells, the Green candidate. Shalene Nightingale is the American Independent.
Hmm. You know what? Really? I mean, I know it's kind of between Brown and Whitman, but honestly, I really don't like either one of them. I don't know.
All I can say for Jerry Brown is Oakland was in fairly decent shape, relatively speaking, when we moved there, and it was just at the end of his term.
Then what happened?
It's a mess now. But there's a lot of things that he put into place that are paying off. You know, it's funny, Jerry Brown in Oakland? Jerry Brown, if you've never heard of him, his reputation is, they call him Moondog Brown. And he's like trippy Zen guy, and he dated Linda Ronstadt. And, you know, they're trying to play that image a little bit in this election, the Meg Whitman side is. Jerry Brown in Oakland, the perception is, in the pocket of business. He sold out to the man. Because one of the things he did is he really pushed for development in downtown Oakland to try to bring in residences and bring in business. And he didn't specifically set aside a lot of that development for low-income housing. And so he came into a lot of criticism from Oakland residents. And they also said he was in the pocket of the developers. Just goes.
You know, I remember, I do remember people talking about... Jerry Brown before he became mayor of Oakland, but during the Pete Wilson years, and you know, what do they call him? Governor Moonbeam, because he had this habit of
Moonbeam. Sorry.
Yes, yeah. And he used to go to very, you know, governmental, you know, state government meetings, legislator meetings, and you know, if you didn't care what you were saying, you would actually start picking up a newspaper and reading it. like as to totally like not care. So he had this very strong reputation of being, sure, he was an out of the box thinker, but some say a little too far out of the box. And his political legacy with his daughter Kathleen Brown has kind of cemented, you know, especially on the more conservative voters of California, just a total dislike of Brown. Doesn't matter what he does, you just don't like him.
Yeah. There's also a senatorial race in California, like there is in a lot of states. You've got an incumbent Democrat, Barbara Boxer, versus a moderate Republican challenger, Carly Fiorina.
Who was
head of HP, right? She was the CEO yes. of HP. I don't think that's as good a race to look at as, say, some other ones. What's going to happen in this midterm election is, in my opinion, based on just what I've been reading and seeing, the Republicans gain control of the House and then lose control of themselves. Republicans are going to win the House. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But they are going to win it based on some of the Tea Party people that get in. And the Tea mm-hmm. Party people are avowedly trying to take over the Republican Party from within. So there's going to be all these old-style Republicans versus these Tea Party people. And the Democrats are actually going to end up in this weird position of being power brokers between these two sides of the Republicans. That's what I think is going to happen.
The two factions.
And the Democrats are going to blow that, where they would have a chance to sort of play a moderate role. Democrats aren't good at playing a moderate role. Well, they're going to blow that. There's not going to be anything done in the next 2 years. Or not that they're, people have a perception not much gets done anyway. I think it's going to be even worse.
Well, the problem is the Democrats are filled with factions even more so than the Republicans. I mean, you have some very, fringe elements that seem very conservative as well as very liberal that are all underneath this Democrat umbrella. So, it'll be interesting how they kind of balance, everything. I mean, you have what are they called? The Reagan Democrats, people who are, we'll spend for Social Security and other things, but they're quite conservative, very pro-defense. And on the flip side, you have very anti-business, corporatist, mindset, people who think that Obama's caved into the Wall Street bankers by giving them bailouts, hasn't done enough to, push forward the progressive agenda he promised during his election campaign. So, I think everyone's kind of schizophrenic. And this is kind of the issue when you get so big that you're encompassing, people of beliefs that might be, diametrically opposed underneath the same party banner. It should be interesting.
Russ960 on our comments at sabrilliant.com/EMW said, Tom, I'm not sure I totally buy the market predictions. That's one of the things I use to guide what I think, as these themselves are biased by those choosing to participate. At the end of the day, only the actual count will matter because the other methods are corrupted by personal political bias. Personally, I would like to see a 100% overturn in the House followed by an eventual overturn of the Senate. Russ, that's why I like the predictive markets, because the bias actually is removed by financial interest. He says they're biased by those choosing to participate. That's what the marketplace is really good at, is taking away that bias, because you're not asking someone, what do you think or what are you going to do? You're asking someone to place some money down. And once you ask somebody to place some money down, they stop paying attention to their personal bias as much and focus a little more on what they think is actually going to happen. And because you're not just asking one individual person, you're asking a large group, you average out to a more accurate answer. So I like these predictive markets, and they tend to end up right more often than polls.
That's good. I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's only for the U.S., right? It's only for... Can you do foreign elections as well?
You can do whatever you want. The Iowa predictive markets only do U.S. elections right now.
Okay.
They sort of been expanding what they do, and they try some other interesting issues here and there. But there are other predictive markets out there for sure.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see. I wonder if people do that. People must. for things like, well, people do for Golden Globe, Emmys, all sorts of.
Yeah, there's an Oscar market, I know for sure. Chris wrote that I was confusing the U.S. Murphy's Law with the later U.K. one of the same name. He said he thought the U.S. series might have starred Dabney Coleman, but it doesn't look like it. And IMDb didn't really help. But there were two Murphy's Laws. I was confusing them last week.
Murphy and Murphy's Law.
We also got Victor from Russia. Said, I'm a first-time listener, and I didn't know what to expect, but it was really interesting to listen and try to remember how it was when I went to school in America and compare to how similar and different it is in Russian schools. Then he wrote something in Russian. Should I even bother?
Well, do you have a general context in which to translate?
Я уже давно слушаю вас еще со времени BOL. So he says he used to listen to me on Buzz Out Loud. И меня всегда интересовала... Вопрос, откуда вы знаете русский? Oh, yeah, he's always been interested to ask the question, I believe, from where you know Russian. I studied Russian in college, 3 years, took 3 years of Russian there. There you go.
В университет. As a look back, school systems. Yeah, no, it's kind of, it's pretty cool. I think, I don't know, that's what one of those things. It's one of those cultural elements. I think people speak, really hold really near and dear in their heart is their school, or at least their grade school or equivalent experience, because that's part of your formative years. That's kind of embedded in your head. I mean, 30 years from when you finished, eighth grade or whatever, you still remember certain elements. I mean, do you still remember junior high in grade school?
I definitely remember junior high. Snippets of grade school, and definitely almost like little pictures from kindergarten and first grade, a little more of by the time you get to fifth and sixth grade. I remember significant chunks of seventh and eighth grade though, which is junior high here.
And, I think it's when people will love to compare, because it's kind of comparing different ways that you were brought up. Like, if you were comparing your lifestyle with, say, someone who was raised in some sort of hippie commune, like, oh, we didn't get TV. I went to school with a kid whose parents did not allow him to watch TV. So he had no concept of television shows, commercials, or anything like that. So if you talk to him about it, like, he'd be scratching your head and you would have to explain all these elements. Okay, so a commercial comes in between a program, in between, so they can sell you stuff, and then when it's done, it goes back to the show, and he's kind of like has this weird expression on his face as you kind of explain what the A-Team or Knight Rider's about. Knight Rider has a talking car, and it can do really cool jumps and jump over things with a guy in it.
American TV is so good.
My dad used to watch American TV when he was not a kid, but he was in college.
Where did he go to college?
Well, he went to college initially in Taiwan, and then he came to the U.S.
Because if he was in the United States, that would be not so impressive. I used to watch American TV in college myself, being in America. But you're saying in Taiwan he used to watch it.
Yes. There was a lot. People don't realize how much of American television got exported. People remember watching, Dallas or Wonder Woman or what a plethora of other syndicated shows that got sold overseas.
Cool stuff. So, election wise, Roger, do you have a prediction of your own?
For governor?
Oh, by the way, I believe no, nobody cares about the governor of California. Senate and House, I think, are more interesting. I didn't say, but I think the Senate will barely remain in the hands of the Democrats. So what do you think?
You mean, I don't know. For Senate, I don't know. I know House will move, and I agree with you on the Republicans and the Tea Parties, but I don't know if at some point there will be a big enough schism where policy will, the Republicans will no longer try to, or at least certain group elements within it will no longer try to, moderate or at least change their particular policies to suit, more.
I'm not understanding what you're saying.
Well, so far the Republican you know, the Republican Party has been shifting even closer to the right in order to accommodate all these Tea Party candidates, as well as what they see to be a general shift in supposed Republican voting patterns. But I don't know. I think you can't do that indefinitely, can you? At some point, there's just going to be a break. It's like, well, you know, we're not going to do that. That's just,
I think, you know, we're seeing a shift in that is showing up the weaknesses of the two-party system in the United States. We've got clearly two different parties vying for control of the Republican Party. Very clearly, yes. Right? The Tea Party has really been narrowing its message to say it's a message of spending, not right-wing values. Lately, they've been emphasizing that. Democrats have had that to a lesser extent with things like the Green Party, for instance, but not as clear as that. But like you mentioned earlier, you do see a big divide within the Democratic Party between extremes and moderates. I don't know how we ever get this done, considering that the problem causes the solution to be hard to implement. But we need to change the electoral system here. And it's not in anyone who's in a position to do anything about its interest to do so. You know what I'm saying?
I do. There has to be one thing that kind of triggers that entire process, though. I don't think it'll be an organic one. I think it will be one that will kind of come about through some sort of controversy or some sort of, you know, be it a bill, be it some sort of policy or something, or vote, just something that triggers a cascade of other events that follow that lead up to that. But I don't see it where people say, sit down and kind of like, well, you know, maybe we should start splitting these things up between multiple, you know. Well,
the biggest opportunity for that, for electoral reform anyway, was the disputed election between Al Gore and George Bush. But that caused absolutely nothing to happen. So I don't know what that thing could be that would cause people.
I say get rid of political parties.
But how? I mean, what's going to cause you to do that? The parties aren't going to allow that. The parties have just made themselves more and more entrenched over the years, so that if you do have something like a Tea Party, or a Reform Party, or a George Wallace like party, you can just sort of subsume it and bring it in and eat it. The parties are not, and I try to make this clear because I don't think a lot of people realize it. The parties don't stand for anything. They stand for not the other party. And they will shift and move and change whatever it takes to protect their power balance. But they're not run by idealists. There's nothing behind them. The Democrats used to be the Republicans in the South. And then over the past 20 years, they've become the Republicans.
Dixiecrats.
The Republicans used to be the Democrats in the late 1800s.
The Progressive Party.
Yeah. So they don't care. They don't have it. There's nothing conservative about the Republicans for the most part. There's nothing terribly liberal.
You know,
about the
actually,
Democrats,
you know what? I actually take that back. I think what will happen, what will actually set all that in motion, is gerrymandering overhaul. Basically,
you may be right there.
I mean, isn't there a bill going through the California state legislature about that, or up for a vote to basically repeal or at least redo the gerrymandering laws in the state?
There's been a push for that for a few years. Actually, Governor Schwarzenegger is one of the driving forces behind that reform, and it's got a lot of opposition. But maybe
it does. But if it works, you know, it could spawn, you know, similar legislation across the country. It'd be awesome, because I think part of the reason why the parties are so powerful is because they can pick and choose what areas they represent in order to shore up their power base.
All right. Well, thanks everybody who commented at sobrilliant.com/EMW. We appreciate all of your feedback. It helps us to think and decide what to talk about every week. Thanks to Jammerbee for running the board for us. Thanks to Leo for letting us stream the show live on Twit every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, Roger, for being here.
Thank you, Tom, for having me in my yellow abode.
Thanks, everybody.
I think it all right, though.
Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.